Welcome to the latest OME Talks podcast. I'm your host, David Petro, and today we are talking to Lisa Lenny Borden as a preview to her January webinar entitled Enacting Equity in Mathematics Classrooms. This was originally a deep dive session at the OME 2024 conference, and so it was two double sessions over 2 days, but we will be squeezing that into a single one-hour session. To get a sense of what that will look like, let's hear from Lisa right now. Okay, so I'm talking with Lisa Lenny Borden. Lisa, how are you doing?
Not too bad. How are you?
Great, great. Lisa, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and how you are connected to math.
Okay, so how I'm connected to math. Math and I have had a long relationship. So my current role is I am a professor at St. Francis Xavier University, and I teach mathematics education. I'm also currently the chair of the Department of Teacher Education, which is great because I get to work with hundreds of pre-service teachers every year. But I guess my passion for math, even as a young child, I loved puzzles and problems and loved figuring things out and always enjoyed mathematics. My brother Dan had lots of Lego and building tools, and I think that was one of the things that inspired my passion for mathematics. I loved to play with blocks and build with Lego, and you know, it was lots of fun. And growing up, I always really loved mathematics and enjoyed it, and you know, had the opportunity to, you know, be on the math team competing with contest problems and things like that. And decided to study math in university with the goal of being a math teacher. I always wanted to be a teacher right from the time I was about 3 years old. Used to make my little brother be my student at home with my teddy bears and my stuffed animals. I always really enjoyed mathematics and had the opportunity to become a mathematics teacher. And spent 10 years teaching in Wagama First Nation, which is a Mi'kmaq community here in Nova Scotia. And really had an opportunity to think differently about mathematics, to make mathematics real for my students, to make it come alive for my students. And I learned so much from them in the teaching that I now bring into my teaching. I've been almost 20 years now as a professor of mathematics education, which is weird because I'm only 25. I've really, really enjoyed mathematics, and I love working with kids in mathematics and helping them to figure things out. So yeah, had lots of a long and enamored relationship with mathematics. I really enjoy teaching mathematics and thinking about creative ways to engage kids in learning math. So,
okay. And we always like to ask our guests here how they first either heard of or got involved with OME. And so I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, you know, as a teacher here in Nova Scotia, I'd heard about OME, obviously. And I recall people kind of talking about what a great conference it was, and probably, gosh, I can't remember when my first OEME was, but it was probably 10 or 15 years ago that I was invited to come and speak at an OEME, and it was such a great time. I really loved the atmosphere, and I really liked connecting with the teachers, and it's such a great big conference, and there's so many people and such great energy, and I've been really lucky for the last several years. I think I've probably been there maybe 8 of the last 10 years. So it's been really great to continue to connect with teachers in Ontario and enjoy that energy and connect with other presenters. And often I run into, you know, colleagues from across the country who are also there presenting, which is always lovely. So yeah, it's been a good experience being part of OME.
Okay. And we are talking to you today because you are going to be our January online OME Talk Summit webinar speaker. And you're going to be repeating your session from last year's OME, OME 2024. And the session was Enacting Equity in Mathematics Classrooms. So I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about what you will be doing your webinar on.
Sure thing. Yeah. My webinar or my session last year at OME was a deep dive session. So it was over 2 days, 4 blocks of time, lots of time with people. We did lots of hands-on activities. So this one will be a bit of a scaled back version, but I've been working with this notion of sort of the 4 E's of equity that have been shaping a lot of my work to date. And when we think about those E's, we think about expectations. And we always say it's really important to have high expectations for kids. But what does that mean in terms of, you know, thinking about the impacts of colonialism on many kids? And, you know, how can we understand the history, the legacy that has created different outcomes for different children. And so for me, expectation goes beyond just saying, oh, I believe everyone can learn. It really is understanding, through a trauma-informed lens, some of the challenges that different kids in different communities face, and how maybe they have, there are structural barriers that are preventing them from having access to that success in mathematics. And, you know, I talked about playing with Lego with my brother, and, you know, that's one of the best things to build kids' spatial reasoning. But if you're living in low socioeconomic status, you probably don't have Lego because it's very expensive. And so I was lucky. My mom worked at Sears as a kid and had a discount. But, you know, those opportunities around expectations are really, really, we need to really think deeply about what we mean when we say having high expectations for kids, and really teaching through that cultural consciousness that we really recognize and honor and value what children bring into the classroom. So we'll talk a little bit about that in the webinar. The other thing I talk about also is the opportunity to engage with elder knowledge. And often when people think about equity or Indigenous knowledge in mathematics, that's the first thing they go to is like, how can I teach a lesson that brings in Indigenous culture? And so we'll talk about that. For many years, I've been involved with a program here called Show Me Your Math, which invites young Indigenous kids in Nova Scotia, Mi'kmaq kids, to go out and have conversations with elders and knowledge keepers in their community about the math they use in their everyday lives. And so we'll talk about how we can bring in that elder knowledge and, how do you do that in a good way so that you're honoring the community, avoiding kind of trivializing or cultural appropriation. And so we'll give some examples from the Show Me Your Math and hopefully inspire people to find ideas in their own context that they might bring into their own math classes. The third E that I like to talk about is the ethics of mathematics, and how do we use mathematics to create a better world? How do we use mathematics to solve problems that are real? So I've often talked about things like, you know, climate change or water security in First Nations communities, and how is math an important tool for solving those problems? And so looking at the real impacts of real world problems that impact communities, and how can we see that mathematics is an important tool to tell our own stories and to understand how these things are impacting community. And then the last piece that I always talk about is the epistemology, or the ways of knowing, being, and doing in community. And so that's where people have heard me talk about the verbing of mathematics. So how do we use a verb-based approach to teach mathematics? How do we bring in more spatial reasoning in mathematics? How do we allow kids to play with mathematics in ways that are culturally consistent? And so that notion of using the ways of knowing, being, and doing from community to learn mathematics, that's a big piece of what every teacher can do right away, right? So I put those four E's together and they create a nice little model that we'll talk about in the webinar.
So you mentioned the fact that when you did this session at OME, it was a deep dive session. And now, you know, I'm thinking about even just those four E's, I feel like you could do a whole session on one of those E's.
You could, absolutely.
So I feel like this is just going to be like an action-packed webinar here. You're going to have to try to squeeze that all in.
Yeah, it's something I have done as a shorter talk before. So I actually did a talk in Australia this summer at ICMI, where I highlighted these four E's and talked about them. In the deep dive last year, we really got to dig into lots of examples and do some hands-on tasks. So I think in the webinar, we'll give people a flavor, and then maybe I'll point them to some directions where they can explore some tasks. I'll share my Padlet where I share a lot of activities that they can explore. And so it'll really be a flavor of kind of thinking about, if you're in the process of beginning to engage more with Indigenous knowledge or equity in your own classroom, what are some of the big ideas that you can start with? And those different things, like elder knowledge, is something people always think they want to start with, but it's often the hardest because you have to build those relationships. You have to have community knowledge keepers from the community come into the classroom to share with you, to share with the kids. But, you know, verbing math is something people can do tomorrow. So I think that there are different entry points for everybody. And depending on your access to community supports, it might make more sense to start in one place or another. In terms of like the expectations for students. I think the more times we can talk about kind of decolonizing our own thinking and addressing our own cultural biases, I think, you know, that's always going to make it better for folks. So yeah, I think some people have a social justice persuasion, so they might take that on as their primary task. But yeah, so I guess I see it as a place to start, not a place to finish.
So you mentioned the idea of, you know, bringing people from the Indigenous community into your classrooms. And this might be a naive question, but I mean, is that more difficult to do in some areas, like physically, like, you know, I'm from the Windsor area versus, say, Toronto versus Ottawa, you know, is that more, you know, like, where do people start to make those connections if they don't already have them?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I was so blessed that I worked in a community school where we had elders in our classrooms all the time. But I know if I was in the city, for example, or even here in Antigonish, where I live now, there it's not as easily accessible because there's not necessarily those community connections. So one of the big things is, wherever you are, is to find out who are the communities that your school serves, like who lives in and around your area, who are the Indigenous folks of your territory, and are there folks in your school board? You know, most districts in Ontario have folks who are specifically designated as Indigenous liaisons, right, to community. Same here in Nova Scotia, we have people who support Indigenous knowledge in the classroom. And so really connecting with those folks immediately is really important, because they're the people who are going to build those connections. But it's something that you can't just, you know, call up an elder someday and say, hey, can you come into my classroom and do X, Y, or Z, whatever, come make baskets or come build a drum, because you really need to build those relationships. And for me, I've been doing this work for 30 years and I still, you know, work on those relationships. And I still have to think about like taking the time to build those connections if it's somebody new, or, you know, thinking about who would be the best person to come in and share this knowledge, and connecting with the community members to know who is the person that's going to come and share knowledge or people. But I think it is harder in some places if you don't have those connections. And that's one big thing I always say to teachers is go to community, go to the communities that you serve, right? That's the best way to build relationships. Show up for functions, show up for funerals, show up for wakes. Be present when things are happening in the community. Show up for celebrations. Just go be present. You know, there's a Mi'kmaq word, nalig, which kind of means hanging around where you're not wanted. But it was always said to me with a loving kind of connotation that I was nalig. But it's that idea that you show up, right? You're present and you kind of are connecting with people. And the best way to build those relationships is just to be present in community, to build connections, to show up for families when they need it, to show up for people when they need it, and to be present and build those relationships, because then people will see you and respect that you're committed to connecting to community. And I think that's the place to start. So it does take longer for that elder knowledge piece to come into the classroom if you don't have those connections, or there's not someone in your school that has those connections. Obviously, you know, you may be in a situation where there's someone in your school who has those connections and they can support you to build that relationship. But that's the place we have to start, is building those relationships, trusting and reciprocal relationships, not just exploitive, right? You can't just ask for elders and not give back. So that's important too.
So now I see that you're actually looking at examples that draw from K-12 classrooms. So can you give me an example, give us an example of, you know, something that, you know, draws from that wide range? Or are we talking about, you know, this works more in the younger grades and these ones are more for the older? Is there something more universal?
Yeah. So I like to take an idea, like, let's say verbing math, right? All Indigenous languages in Canada are verb-based. They talk about flux and motion and flow and movement. And so things are not static, and mathematics tends to be static. So if we take an idea like verbing math, well, you know, when we're working with really young kids, it might be just doing something like storyboards, where we're joining and separating and comparing quantities, right? So we might do storyboards with like little characters that we add to or take from the storyboard to do addition and subtraction kinds of stories. But the focus is on the putting it together and taking it apart. you know, in grade three or four, it might mean in multiplication, I have this great activity I like to talk about, sets of, rows of, jumps of, where we, you know, build sets or we build rows or we build equal lengths on a number line. And we talk about how do we get the total without ever saying the word multiplication, right? And kids start to create strategies. You know, they might build sets on a 10 frame, 4x6, and notice that it's 4 fives and 4 ones, and we can put those together. And so that idea of verbing, it's building, right? We're building this concept. Or it might mean in middle school, something like the bucket of zero, which I like to use where we're teaching the multiplication of integers, where we're adding sets of or taking sets away. And when we take away negative integers from my bucket of zero, we realize that multiplying a negative times a negative is a positive. And in grade 12, it might mean things like, you know, geometric sequences in series where we're actually physically building them and talking about how do they change over time, or graphs or functions. The thing about high school mathematics is that if we stick with it long enough, we actually get to talk more about things like rate of change and movement and change and all that kind of verb-based stuff. But you have to go through a lot of nouns to get there. And so, you know, what I like to do is say, you know, what does it look like at different grades? And verbing is a nice example of that. With elder knowledge, it might be different things. Like, you know, it might be what does basket making look like in grade 2 versus grade 10 versus grade 12, and how do we take that approach? I have a great example of, you know, grade 2s who made basket making, and they just started to talk about parallel lines, right? And, you know, how many strips and things like that. We do a nice basket making, quill box making activity where we talk about the three and a thumb notion, where the distance around the circle is three and a thumb times the distance across the circle. So we can discover pi. And, you know, we had a great activity with grade 10s where they looked at the basket, the ratio of the surface area to the capacity to find out what's the most efficient basket using basket making. So there are different things that we can do at different grade levels, but the idea can be rooted in the same kind of starting point, I guess.
I've never really heard of that three and a thumb.
Okay.
That is definitely going into my lexicon. That I love that.
Well, I've actually developed a great Desmos task. So it's called Diane's Quill Boxes, and you can search for it. It's actually on my Padlet. So I'll send you a link, David, and you can share that with your listeners. But it came from a story told to me by an elder, the late Diane Tony. And she said she was a quill box maker. She made beautiful quill boxes, porcupine quill boxes. She said, you know, I start with a birch bark top, and then I need to make a wood strip to go around the circle. And so to know how long that wood strip is, I go three times across and I add a thumb width, and it makes a perfect ring every time. And of course I said, that's pi. And she said, no, it's common sense. An elder taught me that when I was making that. But it's interesting because it's a ratio that was widely known by folks who make circular things. And so we had another elder talk about when you're making a drum, a hand drum, it's, you know, you go three times across and you add a hand width. And so that proportionality is there. And so this was a task that I've used quite often. It was actually that conversation that inspired the Show Me Your Math program back in 2007, because we wanted kids to have those conversations with elders. And so we designed this task. I've actually piloted it with some former student teachers that I had, and they're out in the system and they've used it, and we perfected it a little bit. So yeah, it's great Desmos task now. And I know in Nova Scotia, certainly it's widely used, but happy to share that with others. It's a great little math story.
Yeah. I look forward to seeing that link. So, you know, when we go back to the title, Enacting Equity in Mathematics Classrooms, what do you say to teachers that, you know, mistakenly think of equity as being the same for everyone?
Yeah, I mean, that's a challenge, because equity is really, we know, giving people what they need, right? And so it's understanding maybe the structural barriers that children are facing and addressing those structural barriers. And that's different for everybody. Everybody comes with their own backpack. We like to use that metaphor. And they have gifts and strengths in that backpack. And some kids have backpacks that get valued in school, and some kids don't, right? And so what we're trying to do when we talk about equity is to help people understand that there's all kinds of different gifts and talents that kids bring into the classroom. And our job as teachers is to take a strengths-based approach and find what's successful for them and help and support them to be their best, right? To help them to learn in ways that are going to work for them. And that's not the same for everybody. And so it does mean that we have to think differently about what success looks like or what, you know, what support looks like, right? We need to support a lot of kids in a lot of ways. And we can't always go with our assumptions that our lived experience is shared by everybody, right? And I think that's the biggest thing. And when we talk about unpacking our own biases, we really need to think deeply about, you know, what are we assuming is, quote, normal, and how are we maybe taking our worldview and imposing it on other kids instead of really trying to get in and understand what are their gifts and talents that they bring, you know, and what are their strengths that can enhance and grow our classroom. And when we do that, then everybody gets better, right?
Okay, so as I normally say at this time, I don't want to give the whole session away. Like, we just want to do a little bit of a teaser. So I thank you for talking to us today about what your OME Talks webinar is going to be about. And we look forward to hearing you in January.
Well, thanks. I look forward to being with you in January.
That was Lisa Lenny Borden talking about her January 8th OME Talks session, Enacting Equity in Mathematics Classrooms. This session is for OME members only, and they can register on our MCIS registration page. Lisa talked about her Desmos activity on circumference of circles and her Padlet of links, and all of those links can be found in the podcast description. This is the last regular podcast of this season, but stay tuned in a few weeks when we will have some previews of our featured and keynote speakers from the upcoming OME 2025 conference in Oshawa. So until then, stay safe.